Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Thursday, changing it up on you, September 2nd. And John, I'd like to be the first to wish you a happy four-year anniversary.
Wow. We've been doing the podcast for 4 years. That's insane.
Yeah, that is insane. The longest relationship of my life.
I'm looking up what gifts should we be getting from people, or do we give them to each other? Fruits and flowers.
Fruits. Ooh. Well, the good news is I love fruit. Grapes are accepted. Watermelons. I would love to walk outside and find a watermelon in my mail. So if somebody could make that happen for me, I will thank you very publicly on this exact platform. So roughly 1,400 people will hear me thanking you, which isn't nothing.
I'm hoping for, that's a lot of people. We've been inching towards 1,500 an app for over 4 years. So
look out.
It's a good number. Thank you to everyone for listening.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Mom.
My mom stopped listening a long time
ago. I don't think my mom's ever listened, so that's okay.
I can tell you that my mom found out I was doing it and didn't really know what a podcast was. And she was like, that wasn't really great. I didn't know anything you were talking about. But it sounded like you were having fun. And I was like, Mom, that was the most mom thing you could have said.
I mean, my brother asked me if I was still doing this the last time I talked to him. So that should tell you how invested the family is.
My wife says the same thing, but more of like, when are you, please stop.
Yeah. Don't tell her it's been 4 years.
Exactly. Hey, big news this week, though.
Big news.
Lay it on me. You?
No, go ahead. Please.
MSU named a new athletic director. So in our tenure, we've seen three athletic directors.
Wow.
That's crazy.
I don't know what that says about us. Kingmakers, maybe?
I don't know. King Slayers, potentially.
Nah.
Well, they passed on Austin and me, and I don't love it. But Alan Haller, another insider, similar resume to us. He is a Spartan alum like us. He's been at Michigan State for 11 years, a few more than we were there for, but regardless, he's a top tier fundraiser. Okay, he has that thing over us. He helped hire Tucker and D'Antonio. I feel like we helped hire.
We were part of that for sure.
We also, I think, helped get rid of D'Antonio. I'd like to say.
I think there's something to be said for that.
And he crafted the football facility plan, which is great. We didn't do that on the to-dos, but. But I mean, all intents and purposes, I would say a hire that a lot of people are happy with. The reason I'm most happy about this is that this is a diversity hire. A black man is now the athletic director at Michigan State. I think that's fantastic. And one of very few FBS schools in the country that now has a black athletic director and a black football coach. So that's important for a lot of reasons. And I think he's also very, very beyond qualified. So that's great too.
I would say. Sorry, John. Go ahead.
No, I'm just pumped. I think I'm pumped about it.
Yeah, I would say, first and foremost, I would agree with you. I mean, the qualifications I think sort of speak for themselves. It's a very like MSU thing to do, to keep things in house, to promote internally, and to promote somebody that, has been a part of making the MSU athletic department what it is, which is one of the better ones in the country. I mean, we've talked about it time and time again. The alumni base is massive. This man knows how to fundraise. I don't think there's any coincidence that that has been prioritized. And frankly, he's, like you said, he's been groomed for this. I mean, this man, like you said, has been a part of numerous coaching searches, which yielded us our last two football coaches. And I think because of that, it's I'm sure the inevitable Tom Izzo departure you know, this isn't a brand new person who's coming into MSU with no real MSU ties. I think that's really should put some people at ease when it comes to thinking about, you know, how is that transition going to be handled? You have a guy that's been a part of two transitions now, really the D'Antonio to Tucker one, certainly the more recent and more impactful than the John L. to Mark D'Antonio. That one we were all excited about. But it's a great hire. And yeah, I do think that there's something to be said for the fact that, you know, Michigan State is one of the only schools in the country to have a Black athletic director and a Black head football coach. I think that, you know, a lot of the young men that they influence, quite frankly, and a lot of the people that they, you know, create an athletic department for, I think it's pretty inspiring and pretty amazing that they look up to those positions and see people that look like them. I mean, that honestly is pretty fantastic and really just in general, very exciting and progressive thing for MSU to do. But I don't want that to overshadow the fact that this man was hired because of his qualifications. He's not being hired because of he's a minority or anything like that. That is just simply a mere statement of fact, but a fantastic hire. Somebody who I think was probably always the odds on favorite, but MSU did apparently do their due diligence. I believe they reached out to the Auburn athletic director as well as Heather Like from Pitt. Yep. So they did their due diligence, and it's exciting that they landed on and Alan Holler.
Two quick notes about Alan. One, we mentioned that he helped hire D'Antonio. If you can go in the Wayback Machine, D'Antonio wasn't necessarily a very popular hire.
Not at all.
I mean, this was a guy who was 18 and 17 at Cincinnati. And, you know, he did have the defensive coordinator, Natty, to his name at Ohio State. But, you know, as a head coach, I think a lot of people thought, is he really ready for this stage? It's not to say that Alan was the only guy that had a say in this, but to be able to be a part of the very few people that were a part of that process and make that hire, that alone, you know, and then obviously carry over to the Mel Tucker hire, who, you know, a lot yet to be determined, but you've seemingly made at least one great hire. Things, you know, TBD on Tucker, but all for as of today seems pretty good so far. I think people are happy with the progress to date. We'll get to where we're at the end of the year. And, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said about the fact that he was the favorite of a lot of former players and people within the organization. So he's won over a lot of people. People trust him. And I'm excited to see him take the reins here as we blast forward into the future of college sports, which is changing rapidly. And one of those big pieces is MSU student athletes can now combine their name, image, and likeness with Michigan State's official trademarks and logos. And for the layperson, this means that Max Christie, as an example, can put the Spartan S next to him. And that is worth a lot more to potential sponsors than just a player's name. So that is a very big deal. I think this is only going to be mutually beneficial. More players are going to be able to cash in and get more dollars for these potential sponsorships as a result. And what MSU likes about it is it's going to give them a bit more creative control over who is, you know, touching and being a part and using their logos and like trademarks. So when I say that, I mean, not every player has to sign in to be a part of this program. It would probably be beneficial for them to do so, because as I mentioned, they will probably make more money to do it. But then you're probably going to lose the Barstool Sports of the world. You're going to lose some of the types of, I guess, I don't know what to call it, sponsors that maybe would be questionable to the university. So I think that's what you can keep an eye out for. And I think this type of deal is just the beginning of some pretty major stuff coming down the pike.
Yeah, and that's incredibly exciting. I mean, for the players, you know, it's nice that they're not, you know, not just paying lip service to this whole NIL thing. I think that they're giving them the ability to do this and in turn earn more money. And if we're not being naive here, it's ultimately going to benefit the school just as much as it benefits the players, as it always has. So all things considered, seems to make sense for everybody involved. Not the only news on the NIL front Well, this isn't really NIL as much as it is MSU players, prior players working their way into, I don't know, the forefront, making money, I would hope. EA Sports has announced that 10 College Legends teams are in the Madden game. As you like play with your individual player, you can go up through the ranks in college, like become a pro. And one of only 10 teams chosen are your Michigan State Spartans. I think that's insanely cool, personally. Absolutely. And they came out with like a roster of the players that are also on Michigan State's team. And I want to know from you which one is the most hysterical.
Tabor Pepper, tight end.
I'm not sure what you mean. He was obviously a tight end legend at Michigan State. Just comical that they included him there.
Hey, you know what? Whatever. Also, I don't know. What was yours?
I mean, that's the only answer. I would say the other one that's funny is that, like, I look around this. Oh, Monte Nicholson. As I think I said to Matt Sheehan on Twitter, I can't wait to sprint directly towards the sideline on a 90-degree angle just to feel like I'm watching Monte Nicholson all over again.
That's rude.
Very few players hurt me like Monte.
You know, there were some players that made the cut recently that weren't probably in the EA Sports game, but made rosters. The most surprising to us, I think, was Malik McDowell's comeback story. Made the 53-man roster for the Cleveland Browns. And if you remember, this was a second-round pick. Had some things really go wrong in Seattle on the field and off. And that would have been 2 years ago. And then he kind of completely, I guess, must have remade himself. And, you know, just getting, I think, an opportunity was a win for a lot, I think, a lot of people. But then to make the team, and not just make the team, and his highlights dominating. I was pleasantly surprised. Good for him.
I mean, it's got to be one of the more unexpected things I've come across. First of all, didn't even realize he was still attempting to play football. I mean, he was in jail for almost a year.
Man.
I mean, that in and of itself is just remarkable that he came out. And I think kudos to the Cleveland Browns. I mean, listen, for better or worse, this is an organization that's been comfortable giving guys second and third shots. I mean, look no further than Kareem Hunt. Now, I don't think I would necessarily put Malik and Kareem Hunt in the same bucket of why they're getting second shots necessarily, you know, but I mean, listen, bottom line is this guy crashed an ATV once upon a time. People thought he would never play again. He barely played, if he played at all. I'm not even sure he actually ended up ever playing for Seattle, the team that drafted him in the second round, like high in the top 50 picks, I think it was. Like, to just let a guy like that go is not something, no matter, I mean, those guys get infinite chances in the NFL. So to get let go from Seattle says something about how he was, you know, conducting himself at that point in time. But to turn himself around, to like grind to that level, to try out for a team and make what should be a pretty darn good Cleveland defense. I mean, like that's a defense that was not good a year ago, but had some good pieces and went out and added a ton. I mean, they signed John Johnson, which is still funny that that's even a person. From the Rams, they drafted the corner from Northwestern. They drafted the linebacker JOK from Notre Dame. I mean, these guys added a ton of pieces, and yet he still finds himself on the 53-man roster, like not even put down on the practice squad. I think that's amazing. I'm thrilled for Malik that he seems to have figured some things out in his life, and hopefully he can really like fulfill that promise that we saw at MSU, and maybe even do it for like a pretty darn good team. So I was shocked when I saw that, but so excited for him.
I know, man. That's awesome. well, people that won't get second chances in our life, Amani Bates chose Memphis. And okay. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. Another guy, basketball, also happened. Isaac Trout Jr., one of MSU's, I don't know, higher priority recruits, would you say, for the class of whatever class it is, 2022, chose Virginia. And that's bad.
It's bad.
Would you care to elaborate?
It's bad. MSU cast a shallow net. They returned one, Trey Holloman, and they have a lot of spots to fill, Austin, and they don't have that many offers out. One went out today, which is good. But when you're looking at nine needing to fill up to five scholarships and having one commit, that is not great. So we'll see if Izzo can get any traction on some of the guys.
Well, listen, at this rate, the team, do we even need scholarship players? At this point, we're half preferred walk-ons anyway. Feels it's like true. That's gonna be fine. Yeah, this is scary. And kind of like the more I think about it, the more nervous it makes me, because we've been in this position before where they've struck out on, you know, the big money free agent names, if you will. And they've ended up settling. And last time it was Gavin Schilling and Tum-Tum Nairn and Alvin Ellis. And it took MSU back to a spot like prestige wise or whatever. It took getting Jaren Jackson and Miles Bridges and these other guys to pull you out of that. And ultimately, like, you don't know how far the back that set the program. I mean, it could have cost you opportunities to win national championships and Big Tens. And like, again, hindsight's 2020. In the end, it didn't matter. They still were very successful in that period of time. But like, Tom Izzo's not getting any younger. Like, he's really only got, I'll be generous and say he's got 5 years left. Truly, I'm not sure he has more than that. Are we looking at a roster in the next 5 years that we think can win a national championship? Look, seriously, like that's the point that I'm afraid that we've reached.
I don't think this roster is in great shape, but I will tell you that there is one change. It's not by no means something that we can rely on, but the transfer portal exists now.
Very true. Very, very, very true. Well, he's got to use it. I think that's the corner he's painted himself into.
Correct. So, and the other quick note on the Hoops team, you may have noticed that Malik Carr and Keon Coleman were not on the roster. I don't find that like to be telling at all, because they wouldn't be on the roster until the winter semester. Right. So TBD if they play. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't, by the way. Like, after playing a year of football, I don't know how appealing it would be to go get screamed at more.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those where you give these guys the option to say, hey, yeah, you can try, knowing full well they're not going to want to do that after a year. I mean, you know what? I actually wouldn't be shocked if maybe after this year they tried to play, only because they're both freshmen and might not see – it's up for debate how much they're even going to see the field. So might not be as worn out as they would be in future years. Yeah, I don't anticipate either of them. And the other thing about both of them is that they're both like guard size. So you're talking about like having to really hone skills to play those positions effectively. Like, remember Matt Trannan? Like, Matt Trannan was at least
– yeah.
Like 6'6", 6'7", and could just go be dirty and play hustle minutes. Like, these guys, I don't think these are positions at which you can necessarily do that. So I think that's a really big wrinkle.
No, I totally agree. And here's something I just want to plant a seed into the listeners' back of your mind. Let it grow. Gabe Brown, senior this year, coming back for another year. Using the COVID year. Hear me out. I wonder if he would, depending on how his outputs come this year, I wonder if he would see the roster next year and say, gee, I can be the best player or team up with Max Christie if he comes back and become a pretty good tandem. I don't know if he's good enough to make professional money. As of today, I don't believe he does. And with, as we keep mentioning, NIL deals, if you're the face of Michigan State basketball, even at a local level, that's going to yield some bucks. So
absolutely.
So you can weigh those options of, again, maybe he makes a huge jump and it's great news and he's NBA ready after this year, right?
Yeah, that would be the best scenario for everybody involved.
Exactly.
We all want that.
I don't know if that's going to happen, So if you kind of follow his career trajectory to date, potential opportunity for him to come back again, likely be a captain, a returning captain if he wanted, and choose to play in East Lansing again over, say, a country far from here. So
let's say, I mean, he could come back, get his master's,
sure,
and I mean, and make a very nice living, a considerable living, while also improving his pro prospects. Yeah, by coming back, I think, like, realistically, money wise, yeah, unless he's like itching to get out there and start his real world career, which at this point, I don't know if that's professional basketball. Yeah, I'd come back. Just, I want to shake him like the kid, like Happy Gilmore. Or no, Billy Madison was like, don't leave.
Stay here.
Don't stay here.
You got to cherish it.
You got to cherish it. Yeah, that's kind of how I would approach that situation if I were him personally.
We are trying to be as creative as possible for our dire 2022 prospects here.
Yeah. 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 Well, there's other football stuff.
Good
there's
football.
Still the 21 football season. And we'll talk about, you know, probably our favorite thing to actually talk about, which is not Michigan State football. Would you not agree?
I it's funny because we joke about being fans, and it's actually more fun to actually talk about everyone else's team than and also not watch your team. Watching your team is hell.
It's the worst. That's how screwed up we are. Like, we're going into this football season when everyone should be like, oh yeah, man, I get to watch my team playing big games against my big rivals. I'm like, I hate it. This is it's like the most, you know, that the phrase thanks, I hate it. Like, that's like football season here. Is football season's here? Thanks, I hate it.
Not for me.
Not my jam.
But for me, what we do love is watching UCLA play Hawaii in 44-10. But most importantly, we like to see Zach Charbonnet. You may remember him from such films as Underused at University of Michigan. And this game with UCLA, he had 6 rushes for 106 yards and 3 touchdowns. So, attaboy, Zach.
I would say the efficiency there is pretty darn good.
Man, good for him. Hey, coming up, I'm getting ahead of myself. UCLA plays LSU this week. So,
Oh man, is this all right? This is like, I'm excited for Chip Kelly. I heard I listened to the most popular sports podcast, and we're going to talk about it in this podcast, but pardon my take. They mentioned that he wore the visor again in this game.
Great.
I wouldn't overlook that as a factor. For the first time at UCLA, he's out there finally wearing that signature Chip Kelly visor. Might spell trouble. But one of these teams, if you're LSU, I think this could be the first time when the Coach O shine starts to wear a little bit if they lose to UCLA.
Dude, to be very clear, there were non-ironic people wanting him fired last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Fired a year after he won a natty. So
football's the best sometimes. Like, this is why I love rooting for this. Why I love other teams. The peripherals of football are truly the best.
Let's go to another extreme. Also tuned into Fresno State versus UConn. UConn traveled across the country to California to lose 45-0. Now, I'm going to be keeping close tabs on UConn this year because I think they have some special in them. I think they might be able to do some things that haven't been done before. When you go across the country and lose to Fresno State, not exactly a power, okay? Like, this isn't exactly a team that you should be losing 45-0 to.
This isn't your David Carr Fresno State Bulldogs.
Absolutely not. So I just want to plant another little seed in your head about UConn. They also later this year travel and play at Clemson. Okay. I don't know who set that game up. I don't know why it wasn't
a masochist.
This is dangerous. This is on the levels of IMG Academy versus
Oh my God.
Bishop Sycamore. like, this is bad. I'm afraid. I think the spread's going to be 70 points.
Isn't Randy Edsall their head coach again?
I don't know. I hope.
I don't know who their head coach is, but this might be the program where, if approached to be the head coach, and I actually pursue coaching as a career, I might say no. I might pass.
It's him.
It's Randy Edsall, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Bring back the civil conflict. If you want me to pay attention to UConn, that UCF-UConn heated rivalry, bring that back if you want my attention, UConn. Or put a Mecca Okafor out there.
You might want to – if there was a program that would shut it down, UConn should maybe be that program.
I have to agree.
Like, what are we doing? They're like an independent now.
No, they're an independent?
Yep.
They're not even in the AAC, Allegiance of Football Gentlemen or whatever it is?
I believe they were like booted.
That's great. You know what? Good for that league.
I think they actually left to join the Basketball Big East Conference and also were like, yeah, I don't know, man. Whatever. Let's just leave the football thing. I mean, you look, they haven't had a winning record since 2010.
I'm surprised it's that recent.
Their best ever program record is 9-3 with Randy Edsall as head coach.
I mean, he's got a lifetime contract, right?
I guess until the program dies.
Until he goes back to Maryland.
Yeah, we're going to keep our eye on UConn, man. It could get ugly. Speaking of ugly, the Big Ten opener.
Nebraska. Oh, baby. If your ugly is my beautiful.
Nebraska. Scott Frost, fourth year. Looking for the fourth year bump. And got his guys. And he had a four-year head start on this game in Burt Bielema. And travels to Champaign. And when I tell you this game had everything, it did. It had everything.
I mean, you don't just waltz into Champaign, Illinois and expect to not get a fight. I think that's the least intimidating Big Ten venue. It's got to be.
Yeah.
It's got to be. It is not far for anyone except for some of the folks on the East Coast. Like, and nobody cares. Like, I would say that Northwestern is actually the least intimidating, but like, Northwestern's fielded enough frisky teams for some things to have happened. Illinois hasn't quite reached that yet. But I think that I want to know what the line on this was. But the fact that the opening score of the college football season was, in fact, a safety, and the fact that it came because a guy fielded a punt inside his own five and went backwards into the end zone, like, that is such
– oh,
that's such dark poetry. I, like, don't even know how to handle it. Like, if I think that would have been it for me. Like, if I was an Illinois fan for whatever reason – that I'd be done with the season. I'd be done. I'd be like, if I was a Nebraska football, that was Nebraska, wasn't it?
No, actually, I believe Nebraska is the one that benefited. I can't remember. It doesn't.
Okay.
I do need you to know that what you just described, it wasn't the worst part. He retreated into the end zone and then threw the football out.
Yes. Loved that move from him, by the way. Like, that is the most relatable moment where you're like, if I was this guy, I would do the exact
thing. You know it's wrong.
But you've already made all the wrong decisions. Like, no, it was Nebraska. So you're telling me this is year four of your program, Scott Frost, and we haven't gotten the you can't forward lateral and you can't field punts inside your five and try to return them. Those messages haven't quite gotten home yet. We haven't. Like, I'm just saying, like, that's football 101. Forget college football. That's just rules. Like, this guy, I'm ready to bust it out. I think he's a fraud. He's a fraud. This thing worked in, he's still starting Adrian Martinez. Someone explain that to me. This guy stinks. He's always stunk, and now the stink is just like, it is a disgusting smell. I'm not sure. I'm not like, you got to fire him. And honestly, you'd be smart to do it now before somebody else tries to sign to hire Matt Campbell. Because Matt Campbell's looking at Lincoln and thinking, whoa, it's paradise compared to Ames.
Dude, so, you're so right about that. And also, you talk about unprepared. He didn't know what defense Illinois was going to have, despite Brett Bielema's entire career.
Oh, man.
Like, and he was admitted in the presser after this week. He was like, yeah, half of our game plan went out the window and they came in out and lined up like that. And I was like, I'm sorry, what?
Huh?
Why do I know more about this than you?
I mean, dude, he lost. I mean, listen, I know it's Brandon Peters, but the starting quarterback got hurt. He lost to a Rutgers transfer backup quarterback at starting for Illinois. What else? What am I supposed to do for you? Like, how can I help you if you can't help yourself?
It's so, so bad. Like, I'm sorry. And Illinois might be respectable this year. That's not the point. It's year four of Nebraska. Like, come on, man. And so Adrian Martinez was 16 of 32, 232 yards. He has 17 carries, 111 yards. So he puts together 343 yards total offense. It's a lot.
It actually is a lot.
How is no one else? And then Oliver Martin and his third Big Ten team. He's a dude.
He went to
Michigan, then Iowa, now Nebraska, I think.
He's working his way gradually further west into nothingness.
It's just like I'm so confused as how it got to be like this. You know? Like, how do you
It's the curse of Bo Pelini, man. They just never, ever, ever should have fired Bo Pelini. It's the bottom line. I mean, listen, if we can unravel the mystery of Nebraska. Once upon a time, they were allowed to have 200 kids on the roster and steroids were legal. Okay. Not checked for. You want to know how they were great? That's how they were great. Ever since then, people are like, oh, that's right. It's Nebraska. Nah, I'm good. And the rare exceptions to that, they have fired because, there are some fan bases out there where, like, again, Michigan always the prime example of, like, you think you're something, you're not. Nebraska is one of the other ones where it's just the expectations and the reality of the situation are just wildly out of place, wildly, wildly disparate from each other. So, I think it's kind of funny that they're bad. I want a refund, quite frankly, on my Nebraska investment as a Big Ten co-commissioner elect. So yeah, I'm done with Nebraska. I think it's funny that they're going to fire Scott Frost, and I wish him luck at Cincinnati or wherever the hell he ends up.
I want you to just remember that Scott Frost said he had a better talent in his quarterback room than Joe Burrow. That quarterback played last week for him, Adrian Martin. So that's his talent evaluation. Just want to throw that one out there. And you know
that's
what?
Fair.
I just want to get on the record. MSU might lose to Nebraska. I don't care. Like, you're four. And this is the product you threw out there. That's embarrassing. Let's move forward because there's some actually great games potentially coming up this week. And we'll get to the Big Ten roundup, which we love to do. I'll let you go through these because there are three massive matchups. And Austin, I'm going to say something. Recency bias, of course. Mm-hmm. Is this the greatest week one lineup we've ever seen?
It's pretty damn close, man. I mean, I can't remember a year, and this is because I can't remember anything, that featured three of the top five teams in the country playing in two games and another top 15 team. I mean, and then a matchup of two other top 25 games. I mean, it's a pretty impressive slate. I mean, we'll start with the one that's probably the least exciting, but inevitably will be the funniest. And that is the number 23 Louisiana Lafayette Raging Cajuns. First of all, whoa. Second of all, head to Texas, down to Austin, to play the Steve Sarkisian-led Texas Longhorns, Nick Saban's latest reclamation project, has taken over the reins in Austin. He does so without an experienced quarterback. I'm trying to remember his name right now, who's going to be starting there. Yeah. Let me look it up real quick. Because I know Sam Ehlinger is – Hudson Card, I believe, is going to end up being the starter there. Sick name. Sick name.
Great name.
So they have Hudson Card. I know Casey Thompson was another player that I believe was of interest as well. Casey Thompson is set to play in this game. So it's going to be, you know, when I look at it and I think, oh, Texas has a quarterback rotation. What could go wrong? It's going to be interesting. I mean, Sark, a lot of people were like, is this a good idea? But, you know, hey, here we go.
Okay, so does anyone trust Texas to win that game?
Like, no.
Right.
After the Maryland stretch we've endured, I don't think so.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, that's why this is going to be especially fun, and you love to see Group of Five team. I just think this has every reason for Texas to not be back.
Oh, right. Yeah, it has tragic comedy written all over it.
And then we got back-to-back games on ABC in the afternoon and evening. That is appointment television, in my opinion.
I would agree.
So
the first one is I'll say this. I think this one is appointment television only because for a couple of reasons. It's a very intriguing game, and that is Bama and Miami playing each other, Miami, Florida playing each other in Atlanta. A couple of things that jump out at me, like, you know, I think at the end of the day, this is one where we look at Miami and they are also not back, because this is a classic. Oh, they've got Derek King. They're they got the Manny Diaz has got this thing getting ready to roll. And then they go in and lose by 70 to Bama. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's so insanely, it's likely that they're going to lose this game by multiple scores. However, if they are playing a freshman quarterback in Bryce Young, I mean, it's still Bama, so I don't think it really matters, because they just, yeah, okay, you've got a freshman quarterback. Oh, I also have like 35 NFL draft picks on this roster, so it's really not good. Like, and that's barely an exaggeration. Might even be undercounting it, to be honest with you. But that is something that might give them an opportunity. I mean, I think that's something where this happens, what, every 3 years, Bama gets a new starting quarterback and it's a young kid. And like, at least recently, ever since, you know, the Tua and Jalen Hurts age, and now Mac Jones was great last year. So this guy's taking over what's been a pretty prolific pipeline, and brings kind of a different skill set, certainly, than Mac Jones with his mobility. I think it'll be fascinating to see how it all shakes out.
Dude, Mac Jones continues to be an inspiration for skinny, fat, doughy kids everywhere.
Absolutely.
Just, you know, I don't understand it. I don't care to understand it. It's just incredible to me.
And it's also the fact that a Bama quarterback beat out an Auburn quarterback in the New England Patriots QB competition probably has to hurt. It's really got to hurt the people at Jordan Hare, whatever, however you say it.
Yeah.
Think it's not it's just not fair. Like, it's not fair that the Patriots just got what seems to be another quarterback that's good. It's just not. It's upsetting.
Well, it's not fair to Auburn. They can't even get a win against Bama, much less anywhere else. So,
or against, Brian Harsin. He said some things. Never mind. Moving on.
Okay, so the second game in this doubleheader on ABC, even more intriguing, Georgia and Clemson. There's still going to be so much money on this field, Austin.
Oh, my God.
Like, when you talk about athletes worth millions of dollars, there's a lot of money on this field. Two of the best, if not outside of Bama and Ohio State, recruiting schools in the nation, and it's going to be on display. There's going to be no lack of athletes out there. It's going to be awesome. It's a neutral field. It's in Charlotte. It's gonna be 50-50, loud, wild game, night game. Tune in. It's just going to be fun. It's going to be like, frankly, this might be not the first time these two teams play this year. I mean, could they play in the playoff? I don't know. Why not?
I think this win could potentially go a long ways for both of them. It's a big test for both of these quarterbacks. I mean, JT Daniels, you know, I think he's one of the kids that signed at like 14 to play at USC.
Yep.
Ends up transferring. And then I think he was hurt part of last year. So this is kind of his first like real shot to prove like, hey, I'm worth some of the hype that I've gotten forever. And then on the other side, you have DJ Ugalele. I'm going to go with that pronunciation. Taking over for Trevor Lawrence. I mean, two guys, you know, and we did see a little bit of him last year, obviously playing and winning, losing actually on the road at Notre Dame, but playing really well in the process. I mean, you get two guys who are probably up there in the Heisman odds that are squaring off in week one. This is another game. This feels like Georgia chokes. Like, if I'm playing the strictly like, here's what's happened in the past, so this is what like history repeats itself cards. Texas is going to lose at home. Miami's going to get trounced, and Georgia's going to keep it close and end up choking in the fourth quarter. Like that's how I see these three games playing out. I would personally think it'd be very cool if it played out the complete opposite way. Be cool if Georgia won. Be cool if Miami won. Be awesome if Miami won, actually. And then it would, you know, Texas being back is always, as long, the longer into the season that we can keep that joke going, the more I like it. So,
well, yeah, Texas will fall on their face. It's just a matter of when. The Georgia thing, here's why I'm picking Georgia in this game without knowing anything about either team. Like,
love it.
A little bit, but not like the way we are going to break down MSU Northwestern.
Duh.
Georgia has done everything right for however many years. They recruit at an elite level. They spend infinite money on it. They don't care about basketball. Like, they're doing everything right, and they just keep falling a little bit short, and it just seems to be like bad luck, right? They're the new Clemsoning. Like they really are. They're the new Clemsoning, and I have just reason to believe that it just has to change, because you can't have that much bad luck when you're that good. You know, eventually the ball is going to break your way. So maybe I'm wrong, but they haven't had any drop off despite all of these shortcomings. And that's why they have a shot.
I'll buy that logic. I mean, it's a team that's surely, again, I don't know it the way that you do either. I know they have a dynamite wide receiver who I believe spurned Michigan in recruiting one time, which is always a nice addition. And I know JT Daniels is supposed to be, you know, one of the better quarterbacks that they've had. Well, here's the other thing. They've done everything right except for let Justin Fields transfer to Ohio State. That is one thing where, like, it's one of the, like, the curse of Justin Fields type deal. I could see being a thing there for a while. But no, I don't disagree with you. I will still skew Clemson, because I think that quarterback, I think Ugalele is like an absolute superstar, and I'm not totally sold on JT Daniels. So that's the difference that I see. I mean, that kid went out and threw for almost 400 yards on the road under the lights at Notre Dame as an 18-year-old. Like, I don't need to know more than that.
Okay, here's another consideration. We'll be watching MSU Northwestern approximately 18 hours prior, and it's going to be a completely different sport.
It's not the same game. You will not be watching the same game Friday night as you will Saturday night. That's just a fact. There's nothing we can do about it. I will say, as we get into the Big Ten Week 1 schedule, I love my sport. I don't want my sport to go away. I love how stupid the Big Ten is.
Of course. It's like, we are big dumb animal folks. Like,
absolutely.
And like, I think a perfect rev up here to the MSU Northwestern game is actually a Thursday night game of Temple Rutgers.
Ugh. Everything about that. The Fighting Anthony Russos. against the Fighting Artur Sitkowskis. Man. I mean, the Fighting Jeremy Itos. What else do we need to know? This is going to sound crazy. This is a game Rutgers should win.
Yes, they should.
Rutgers should easily be favored in this game.
Night game, baby. Piscataway. You don't want to go there after that.
Talk about a house of horrors. You don't want to. You don't just waltz into Piscataway. It's my favorite thing to say about any location. I used to have a joke with my buddies when we talk about the location we always chose was Corvallis. You don't just waltz into Corvallis and come out with a win. When in fact, you often do waltz into Corvallis and come out with a win. But yeah, that's a stupid one. I love it.
I don't know why it's so funny, the phrase waltz. And like, it's going to be so easy. I'm going to waltz.
I'm going to dance. I'm literally going to, I'm going to learn a dance. And yep. When am I going to use it? As I walk into, as I enter this stadium. No other time.
Zero other times. So you can't waltz into Piscataway. Another place you can't just waltz into, Austin, Ohio State. I'm putting them on. Oh, upset alert. Putting them on alert. You don't just waltz into Dinky Town and play Minnesota at night under the lights. They are a 14-point favorite, but like we always say, if you want to play Goliath, play him early. And play him at home and at night if you can. In Minnesota, I'll tell you one thing. PJ Fleck has upped the recruiting there substantially. Doesn't mean they're at the level of Ohio State's by any stretch. But they have guys at a handful of positions that are at that level. And that alone, with home game at night, just putting you on alert.
Yeah. Is Tanner Morgan still the quarterback?
Still is.
Wow. That's incredible. That's another guy.
Got a veteran.
You could tell me he's a sophomore. I would believe you. You could tell me he's a seventh-year senior, and I'd also believe you.
Three-year quarterback. Common, you know, you got the best running back potentially in the Big Ten.
Yeah. I mean, listen, they just pumped out a first round wide receiver. I don't know what else you're supposed, like, that should say everything you need to know. Rashad Bateman.
Clear. Ohio State is favored by 14, and for good reason. But when you have Muhammad Ibrahim at running back, you can just give him the rock and expect yards. It's not for nothing, man.
Well, that's if you can expect yards and just get in the rock. It's still Ohio State. I will only – this is one of the few times that I say that I might reverse course on the Goliath thing, only because it's Minnesota, and if this game was in November and it was a snowstorm, that might be even bigger of a home field advantage. However, yeah, I mean, like, imagine the horror that would fall into their hearts when they look across the sideline and see a grown man eating a Dilly bar in a snowstorm. I don't know how you bounce back from that mentally.
The bad news for Minnesota here is that Ohio State's defensive line is not only the best in the conference, it's up there within the country. So that's tough. So you're going to be really you're going to be looking at Tanner. Hey, it's not a bad option. You're going to have to test the Ohio State secondary. And really what it comes down to is Ohio State still the juggernaut on offense with the new guy behind the center?
Yeah, CJ Stroud is going to be the freshman that gets a look. I'm going to say that they're still going to be really good, but that does give credence again to the early. You're going to play them early. This is the type of team you do want to play early because they have that young quarterback. So yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's open enough. I'll buy that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's fast forward. That's also Thursday night. So you get a great, a nice appetizers before
that's
MSU.
Sexy. That's a sexy Thursday.
Hell yeah. Then, we'll get to MSU Northwestern on Friday. We have early kicks, Western Michigan at Michigan. Western Michigan scored a lot of points last year. They didn't play any defense. But they scored a lot of points, and they return a lot of that production. I'm not putting Michigan on OPE alert, but I am saying there might be some points scored in this game.
Here's the thing. The combination of what you just said alongside the fact that their new defensive coordinator, who's been brought over, was previous position coach with the Ravens. I think this is a game Michigan should be nervous about. I mean, they're clearly the more talented team, but at the end of the day, their quarterback, Cade McNamara, has a handful of games of experience, never played in front of a crowd. Their defense, yes, you have Aiden Hutchinson, yes, Daxton Hill. I mean, obviously there's I know there's more talent there that I don't know off the top of my head. Josh Ross, I think, is still there. But listen, we saw what happened to their secondary last year against Rocky Lombardi.
Ooh, boy.
And not great. And now they're bringing in a new defensive coordinator who hopefully changed the scheme. And
not good.
Because it was bad prior. And listen, you still don't know what you're going to get out of Josh Gattis as a play caller. I mean, a lot of East-West Dave Warner-style stuff last year and his previous season. So, listen, Michigan is – you don't get good vibes coming out of that program right now. And at home to an in-state team that returns a lot on offense and can score some points, it's not an awesome recipe for success. So, I would still expect Michigan to win, don't get me wrong, but – this is not an early season gimme like they typically schedule.
Here's what I think. I think it should be a gimme, first of all. But every once in a while, directional school pops up and is decent. Western, they averaged 42 points a game last year. Now, it was all against MAC opponents. This is much different. So, but it's better than scoring whatever MSU averaged. So I think, I think they're going to be some, as we mentioned, the under over is actually pretty high. It's like 67 or 68. So it'll be entertaining if not anything. And here's what I do think will happen and why the under might actually be a decent bet. I don't know. I think Michigan is going to try really, really hard to own the game, run the ball. They'll have success doing it. Western is not going to be able to stop them. And they're just going to try and really warm up Cade, no position, putting him in positions to not have to win the game or even win plays, just ease him in. And I think that's what the Michigan program needs right now, is to try and ease back into it.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, that's a solid responsible approach is what MSU, or that's what U of M typically does. And that's why they let teams stay in games, and that's why they lose stupid games they shouldn't lose. I'm not saying it's the wrong approach. It's just it's backfired on them before. So this will be very interesting to see how that goes.
Harbaugh's, until very recently, only never lost games he shouldn't have. Never lost games he should have won, though.
Like, it's true.
Last year is the first year, and that was to us. But anyway, let's just let them, go through the motions on early morning. A huge one takes place, might be the Big Ten game of the week. We couldn't decide. Penn State heads to Camp Randall, number 19 Penn State, number 12 Wisconsin. I don't know why this is 11 a.m. I think this feels like it should be later, but regardless, Wisconsin, a 4.5-point favorite. What do you think about that?
I think Wisconsin's, I mean, listen, they're at home, which is probably part of why they're getting the points and all of that. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, I'm sorry. There's apparently a drag race going on outside of my apartment right now. What's that?
Can't hear it. So you're good.
Okay, great. Well, there's someone's having a really good time just right next door. So anyways, Wisconsin, I think, I don't know. Like, I could go either way on them. Like, I think, again, it's another team that Saeed Khalif obviously was a big part of it, increasing the talent level there. You know they're going to have a great offensive line. You know they're going to be able to run the ball. It's just a matter of whether the quarterback is really kind of the real deal, right? Like, Jack Cohn was a reliable starting quarterback previously, but he has gone to Notre Dame. And this is – I'm trying to remember his name. Graham Mertz. Yeah, he's one of their biggest recruits of all time, and it's time for him to live up to it. And if he lives up to it, it's gonna be a really damn good team. And I think they're gonna be just fine against Penn State. But Penn State is another team that's totally loaded, and that's a team that if you really trusted the head coach, you'd think I would put up there with just about anybody. But again, Sean Clifford, you got Jahan Dotson. I mean, it's a very good, very talented team. I'm still sticking with Wisconsin because I think home field matters, and I think that I just trust them a little bit more. But quarterback play, I think, is going to decide that one.
Yep, absolutely. Penn State's been wanting a little bit more from Sean Clifford for some time. You mentioned Penn State underperformed last year. I don't think their talent reflected their record. And Penn State's probably one of the most talented teams in the country outside of the elite team I've already mentioned, just from a roster standpoint. I think Wisconsin has they obviously know who they are, but at the same time, do you know who their running back is? You know, this is one of the first times in a while where Wisconsin has some question marks. We do know Wisconsin will be stout on defense. This is going to just be fun because if Penn State loses, I think you can kind of knock them out of the Big Ten championship conversation. Because, like, they'd have to win. You can't afford to lose to Ohio State and hope they slip up. You know, like, they have to win out to go to the playoff after this. Because it's already a Big Ten loss. So
yeah, I mean, it would be, it's a big week one game. I mean, that's a big one for both teams. Much, I think, bigger ultimately, like long term for Penn State, like you said, though.
Yeah. Nebraska looks to get back on track against Fordham. Yep.
Good luck.
That's about
moving
it.
On.
Another really fun game. I don't know if you'd be tuning into this one, but just because Maryland does weird Maryland things at the beginning of the year, and West Virginia is not the West Virginia you may remember from the past. But these two teams, I think when they get together, I want to say is it the backyard brawl when they play?
I love it. No, I think if it's not the case, then it is now.
Well, maybe it's not, but regardless, two regional programs. I think this is going to be really tight. I think Western Virginia is favored by 3. It's at Maryland, though. This is going to tell us, I think, be a great indicator on Maryland as a program. It's a winnable game. But if they get outclassed, then you know everything you need to know about Maryland. But then again, I don't know. They beat Texas, and Texas roster is
– You can't take anything away from the first 4 games that Maryland plays, no matter how they do. You could beat Alabama and Notre Dame and Georgia and somebody else, and I'd still be like, well, let's just wait. The other shoe is preparing to drop.
It's true. But it'll be entertaining at that. Indiana travels to Iowa, and this might be the Big Ten game of the week, junior, to Penn State, Wisconsin. But – Indiana, as they are looking to scale the Big Ten mountain, I would argue Iowa is next on the list of teams they need to surpass. And
I would agree.
They're right there, but it's at Iowa. Afternoon game. Iowa can be a hot. You don't just waltz into Iowa City.
You don't just waltz into Kinnick. I think two things that are very funny here that speak to perception. Indiana comes in ranked number 17, and everyone's talking about, oh man, what a program. Holy crap, Indiana. Wow, wow, wow. Iowa's number 18, which, first of all, just chef's kiss, like one of the most pure rankings. I truly think that these voters don't actually know who's on Iowa's team. We need a team to put somewhere from 18 to 22. Yeah. Iowa. Perfect.
Or they're all in on it and just trolling us, or just
which I hope is the case.
Or they listen to our podcast and they just know how much we love it, that they just are squarely 18 to 22 since 2004. But you're right. Indiana's hype train is out of control. Iowa, people are like, oh, I don't know about Iowa. It's the same ranking.
It's the same deal. But this is a huge one. I mean, again, for the same reasons. As you said before, if Indiana wants a real crack at anything, they're going to have to win this game. It's not going to hurt them in the Big Ten necessarily. Like, they're still going to get the chances to play who they want to play. But anything beyond that, bowl seedings, things like that, it's a big deal. It's also a big validator. Like, you're the higher rated team. You're supposed to win this game. Everyone's saying all these things about you. How do you, you know, respond to the hype? Because, you know, honestly, they've been – the year where they had expectations a little bit was last year, and last year was not a normal season. Now they got to go on the road, play teams and stadiums that have fans, and it's just a different ball game. So it'll be interesting.
Last game, the boys from Corvallis waltz into West Lafayette. Oregon State travels to Purdue. Purdue is 7-point favorite. Purdue, you got to win. Jeff Brohm, you got to win this game. I'm
sorry. Yeah, I mean, boy, I mean, you can't. It's, seriously, if he loses this game, you got to fire him. You can't lose to Oregon State at home. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait.
Okay, you're ready to cut him.
All right. Oh, yeah. You don't. You can't. In year four, same deal. You can't lose. You can't lose at home to Oregon State to open a year. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, it's interesting that we'll be doing the hot seat meter late after week one.
Oh, baby, will we ever.
You know, because I think this year could get really dicey.
Oh, it's going to be fun. It's going to be an active meter, let me tell you.
So that wraps. So should we take a commercial break before we jump into Northwestern?
I think we should. Awesome. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Now we're back. All right. Great. So it's time to talk MSU, our least favorite part of the podcast.
That's not true, because before we talk MSU, we're going to be talking about why Northwestern football stinks.
Just Northwestern stinks in general.
True.
Tremendous submissions. Thank you, as always. Yeah, so the first one here from none other than Sarah, it's just nerds. Great point, Sarah. Touche. Really hit the nail on the head.
It's true.
CT and TC says... / Chris Collins pounding floor gif. Yeah, I mean, it's Gollum losing the one ring level, like, possessed insanity. Truly a tremendous gif all the way around.
Let me do one, because these are images I was sent, and I'm trying to describe them. Verbose Dutch gives us a screen grab of a Northwestern man in the basketball stands reading a book during the second half of an NIT first round game versus Akron.
What a mad lib of things to put into one sentence.
So I just, again, I get sent the photo, but as I'm writing out what I'm seeing, it just gets more and more depressing.
The score bug, easily the worst part. Just unbelievable shit right there. We've also got the only North. Oh, no. I don't know if I can read this one. The only Northwestern football fan I know accidentally hosted a super spreader event this summer. Not great. We've also got two more. Rooting for a team that blew the biggest lead in the history of the Big Ten football and basketball to the same school could not be me. That's wonderful. I appreciate that one, Mark _ Vanderhoff. And the super spreader one was Maddie May, who is a tremendous follow. Finally, we have Cam Hatcher, a.k.a. Dan Flashes. This one's a little more serious. Pat Fitzgerald is the media's lapdog and can do no wrong in their eyes. Man is immune to media slander. If Northwestern has a good season, he's top five coach. If it's bad... well, he doesn't have any talent. It's infuriating. Counterpoint, I would actually say that he is running one of the better cons in college football. And it might just have the best gig in the world, because what you said is entirely, entirely correct.
Well, and he also gets to hide behind Kirk Ferentz in his own division for running an amazing con.
He is just like the elm tree in the forest. Like, other people will come and go, but Pat Fitzgerald will remain. And well, you know what? I got to say, the biggest thing to his credit is he didn't take the Bears job if it had been offered to him. Mm-hmm. Good for you, Pat.
Yeah. Don't want to get exposed. He's smart. He's a Northwestern.
Real smart.
One more from our boy, Zanjo. He sent a couple to us.
Oh boy!
Read the ones I can. Was a photo of Darren Revelle walking as with the captains of a football team, and says he's the worst mascot in all of sports.
Yeah, we could have just skipped all of these and just said Darren Revelle. Click.
Yep. Okay, I'm gonna keep going with Zanjo and things I can say. F. Revel, F. Greeny, F. Wilbon, F. that entire S-ass J school full of self-important people who think they're the story and not the actual sports they're paid to cover. He's not wrong.
That's good. That's good. I will defend Wilbon only because he gave us the tweet that just says Lordy in all caps, and that's something I use a lot. So yeah. There's some good stuff in there from Wilbon. But yeah, I mean, Ravel's the worst person in the media world. So your Northwestern can quite literally never live that down. But, okay, let's talk about the game. I'm done. I can't do this.
Oh, no.
I can't do this anymore.
We have to talk about the game.
Fine.
Okay. So the game, as you know, Friday night at 9:15 Eastern time now. So folks, strap in, because you're going to be up well past midnight to watch the end of this one. The spread opened at 7.5. It is now down to 3. And that is a testament to the sharps, man. They have moved money on Sparty, on Michigan State, man. We have
we've made it.
We've made it when the sharps are bet on you, or they just don't trust Northwestern. Northwestern, can I just go on record as also why they stink? Because we didn't even weigh in. I'm going to do it while we do the
review. Please. I think this, yeah, it's evergreen. Let's go.
Okay. Like, they get such a pat on the back when they do well, which is not as often as you'd think. Okay. They've won 2 division titles in 7 years. Yes. But look at the years they didn't win division titles. Losing records for those years, I believe. Like, so it's really, you know, not just hitting.
It's all or nothing.
It's really all or nothing for these guys. And this year, if you had to pick between all or nothing with this roster, I think you're going to pick nothing. Right?
Yeah, they are quite literally the least experienced team in the land. 129th out of 129 in returning production. They lost some very good players, including Rashawn Slater, who was a top 10 pick, the offensive tackle. And they also lost a Greg Newsome, who I believe is also a first round pick of the Cleveland Browns. Not only that, but then they also came into this year thinking, okay, we'll have a really good skill position player back in our running back. He then proceeded to hurt his ankle, and so that is also bad. Cam Porter, who kind of burst onto the scene last year, it's bad. Like, they quite literally have 0% of their passing back from last year, 0% of their rushing, only 14% of their catches, and 16% of their total receiving. On defense, 40% of their tackles, 14% of their TFLs, 20% of their passes defense. Well, this was not exactly a team that got after the quarterback either, and they're only bringing 14% back.
To be clear, that was from last year's game against Michigan State.
Okay.
But I would argue most of those guys were the same guys. So, you know, those statistics won't be terribly off for this season. But I wanted to point that out because, you know, everyone's like, oh, MSU is a completely different team. Well, so does Northwestern. They just weren't on the roster. They were on the roster and didn't play. So, you know, the interesting thing about Northwestern to me is, you know, some people I think are talking about, yeah, well, you know, they get their kind of guys and they kind of, you know, reload in the sense that it's, you know, the next guys up are kind of running the same thing and it kind of continues to work. Does it? Because again, a lot of times I think you've seen Northwestern a little bit ebb and flow, and the flow is when they've had starters at their most important position for 3+ years. Right. It's not necessarily when they all just, you know, pop in guys who couldn't make it over sophomores and juniors. I mean, that's what happened. And now there's and they're playing. So I don't know. Just because you're a senior doesn't necessarily mean you're any good.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they build their team typically. But like when the seniors aren't 2 or 3 year starters, it's a different ball game. So I don't disagree with you, but as we start to look at like individual players, the quarterback is Hunter Johnson, who is now a senior. So update the ledger. I had no idea. He beat out Washington State's transfer, nope, Ryan Helinski.
South Carolina. That's his brother.
Yes. Oh, that's fun. I didn't realize that. Okay, cool. So yeah, either way, beat out an SEC quarterback transfer. It doesn't say great things about the SEC quarterback transfer, because last we saw Hunter Johnson, things were very bad.
I just want to be clear quickly, though, Austin. Hunter Johnson beat out an SEC quarterback. Okay, but that SEC quarterback left South Carolina, and South Carolina's new starter was a grad assistant 4 weeks ago. So I'm not sold on necessarily beating anyone out right now, because that's the program Ryan Helinski left because he couldn't get playing time.
Okay? Sure.
So, okay, Hunter Johnson. No, last we saw him, he had some really rough numbers. It's been 2 years. He could be better. Sure. Maybe. If you had to pick all or nothing, what would you pick?
I'm picking nothing again here. I can't believe this is his third year at Northwestern. I mean, listen, Peyton Ramsey got the job done. But if you're not beating out Peyton Ramsey, I'm sorry. Like, in your it's just tough. It's tough to look at Hunter Johnson and expect him to come out and perform to the level that this team's going to need him to perform, because you look around at the skill positions, you don't have a whole lot of anything coming back. Now, I will say they did get a receiver transfer from Kansas in Stephon Robinson, who was pretty good for them in 2019. He actually had averaged 16 yards a catch and had 8 touchdowns. But they have to replace their other 4 top pass catchers. So that's sort of a big deal. And at the running back position, they're not even bringing back. They actually had depth at this position a year ago.
Yeah.
With Cam Porter, Drake Anderson, and Isaiah Bowser all on the roster, but now Drake Anderson has transferred to Arizona. Bowser transferred to Miami University. So they're left with Ethan Hull and Andrew Clare. Andrew Clare, a transfer from Bowling Green. That's not great. And if you look at the offensive line, aside from left tackle Peter Skoronski, who's actually pretty well regarded, this is their center, Sam Garrick. They do bring back 3 starters, but I think this is a thing that MSU has run into previously in the past few years. It's not a big offensive line. They don't have a single offensive lineman listed over 300 pounds. And we all know that the listings are typically oversell the actual size. So when I look at this offense, if I'm a Northwestern fan, I do not feel good, because when I see what's here, and then I look across the field and I see what's lining up in the front 7 across from me, in order for this team to score, like an ideal Northwestern team, they're going to run the ball, control the clock, not ask Hunter Johnson to do too much. I don't know if that's going to happen in this game, because I think MSU's front 7 is legitimately good. I'm not going to say great, not even very. I think it's a good front 7 that should be able to, with its size and strength up front, control the line of scrimmage. That puts a lot of pressure on Hunter Johnson. Now, again, maybe this is the year he pulls it all together. To date, you're feeling okay if you're Michigan State, if that is the situation that you're getting put into. Now, same point in time, you need to be able to get after the quarterback, because if you can't, he might be able to sit back there. But again, I will also say the receivers that they've had in the past have been larger guys who can go up and kind of make plays. This is not a big receiving group. Berkeley Holman's under 6 feet, under 200 pounds. Bryce Kurtz, 6'1", 180. And then Stephon Robinson's 5'10", 180. Either the only real backup they have with any size is Jensen Hooper Price, who is 6'5", 215. So that's a guy who could cause some problems. But not a ton of size from the wide receivers, not a lot of bulk up front, 2 backup running backs, a quarterback who hasn't performed. This offense should not be good. And this is where and I'm kind of going here, John, so if you want to jump in, feel free. But like this is where I start to come back to Michigan State. And at first you're thinking like, oh, road game against Northwestern, that's a tough opener. Michigan State's defense should control this game.
You'd hope. I mean,
right?
But it's a bunch of dudes on Michigan State, a lot of whom, you know, are starting new faces, right?
Yeah.
You know, doesn't mean they can't jump off the bat and do well, but, you know, it's new faces versus new faces. And the good news is MSU at least has some guys that have been productive elsewhere. And so you can hope, but then there are also some guys who haven't been that are new faces and are going to be playing right away, specifically in the corners. But what a nice, you would hope to be, what a nice game to ease in if you're, you know, the two corners, if it is Chester Kimbrough and Ronald Johnson against Hunter Johnson. You're easing in, I'm sorry, as Big Ten quarterbacks go.
So absolutely.
Got that.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it's new faces. So I guess maybe the better way to put it is not MSU should control this game defensively, but if they don't, then you're starting to find red flags. Yeah. I mean, again, I'm sure Northwestern will score. I mean, like, I'm not expecting a shutout or anything like that. They'll probably move the ball a bit, break a couple of plays, because again, to your point, MSU's got a bunch of new faces on defense. But at the end of the day, listen, MSU, it's new faces, but that front seven legitimately has actual real top shelf type talent. I mean, you have got that. You have a great defensive line rotation. I mean, in your linebackers, you actually have speed and athleticism. I mean, you know, I'm a little bullish on it in the secondary. You've got guys that came over from big time programs. You still have a senior in Xavier Henderson that's in the back, and Angelo Gross, who's apparently been very good. So I'm optimistic that they'll be able to. And the other thing is, if I was looking at this Northwestern offense and I thought, oh, this is a bunch of guys that have played together before, they're going to be able to figure these things out together, like just out of having experience, then I'd be a little more nervous. But your point is that there's inexperience on both sides. I think that favors the defense.
Probably, yeah. And, you know, as the Northwestern defense is something they can usually rely on. That is something they've been strong throughout Pat Fitzgerald's tenure. This is going to be a game. It's going to be ugly for a lot of reasons, but you're going to tell really quickly if Michigan State's running game, if this is what it looks like. This is against a mid team, right?
Yep.
It's obviously going to get better against, there are a couple of teams that are much worse than Northwestern on the schedule. You're going to tell really quick, if it's not doing well against Northwestern, it's probably not going to go well against probably five plus other opponents.
Yep. Yeah. And there's a couple of things to note with Northwestern's defense. Again, that would make me nervous if I'm a Northwestern fan. I mean, a longtime defensive coordinator, Mike Hankwitz, is gone. He was there for a long, long time, pulled together some great teams. He's not the only one, though. There's only five starters that are back. I mean, they lost their two linebackers that were the heart and soul of that team, and Patty Fisher and Blake Gallagher. Like I already mentioned, Greg Newsom, the corner, is gone. And they lost their top pass rusher, Iku Liota, to Auburn. I mean, that's a lot of talent at big-time positions right off the bat.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think all in all, the over-under for this is 46, and I still feel like that's high. Because
yeah, I would agree.
Because back to prove it, MSU's offense has to prove it to me.
100%. 100%. And I think if you apply the same logic to – now, here's the difference. The difference is that Michigan State's offensive line, I can't believe I'm saying this, should actually, by experience alone, give them a hand up on this defense.
Sure.
Because – four of the five guys, the only one that hasn't started extensively for MSU is Jarrett Horst, who might be the best of all of them.
Yep.
So I think that, and now you're getting guys back into their best positions. I mean, you're getting, you now have two true bookend tackles. You got Kevin Jarvis, who another guy who might be the best, playing his best position. MSU should have the ability to control that line and run the ball somewhat effectively. And to your point, though, if they can't run against this team, I don't know who they think they're running against, because this team does not have a ton of girth or size up front. The linebackers are all around 230 pounds. They play a pretty standard, like a classic 4-3, which you don't see from a ton of defenses nowadays. So, like, if you can't run the ball, you know, running the ball might be a little more tough because they do just put seven men in the box so often. But the passing game, I think, depending on who the quarterback is, I mean, we have no idea who that starting quarterback is going to be. They're going to need to make plays. I mean, I think this is one of those situations where whoever the third wide receiver is going to matter a lot, because they're going to get matched up on a nickel, who is going to be one of on one of two guys, and that's going to be an area they might be able to exploit. I also think that this is a it's an opportunity for the tight ends to make an impact. I mean,
oh boy,
step on these linebackers. I have no idea how that's going to go. I won't hold my breath. One thing that has to be avoided, and that I think it will be interesting to see how this impacts the play calling, is Brandon Joseph, the safety for Northwestern. While he's not a mind-blowing like listed size, he's only listed at 6'1", 192. He is being forecast as a first-round lock to the point that if Kyle Hamilton, who might be a top 3 to 5 pick in the NFL next year, safety for Notre Dame, a lot of people are saying that if he wasn't around, like if he wasn't in this draft class, Brandon Joseph would be the top rated safety in the class. And that's a position that, listen, that's the guy who's going to be back there when the quarterback's trying to go deep. That's the guy who's going to be coming up in the box and making plays in the running game. That's probably the game wrecker of all of these players. So
yeah,
I don't expect these guys to get after the quarterback all that well. They didn't do it well last year, and then they lost their best pass rusher and their two of their linebackers. But again, if MSU had an experienced team coming back, you know, I would say they should go in and win this game somewhat comfortably. But because we don't know what it looks like, we don't know. We don't know who the quarterback is. We don't know what change in the offensive play calling. We don't know what half of these guys starting on the defense are if they're actually any good or if they got run off for a good reason. Like, there's so much that's up in the air that you can't feel as comfortable as you think based on the matchups you probably should feel.
Well, you're right. And speak for yourself on not knowing who the quarterback is. I will also say, I just want a quick PSA. If you are so fortunate as to know who allegedly the starter is, keep it to yourself. Keep it to yourself. If you want to contribute in any simple way, any small sliver of a way to your favorite program, don't talk about it. Because the only advantage MSU has in this game of new faces is the fact that right up until hopefully the moment the game starts and MSU takes the field, they don't know. And it'd be great to keep it that way. So that's my PSA.
I like that.
But what we do learn, we do know, is that Ricky White will not be playing. So you talked about they have all American potential safety. This is true. You have two guys, two proven wide receivers, two guys that are pretty dang good, Jalen Naylor and Jaden Reed.
Yep.
You got a lot of guys that you hope one person pops, and we know it's not the only other guy, Ricky White. He's the only one that's ever shown anything out of this group, and that was for one. So now you're up and down the road. You're going to need something out of it. You need a third guy. You know, somebody else has got to do something, you'd think, in this game. Who's it going to be? I don't know how many looks we're going to get. But you, like you said, a lot of opportunity for these new faces.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a huge, huge opportunity. As we wrap up here, John, do you have a prediction? Is there anything you'd like to predict?
I do. I'll go with this. I think the most important player on this team is one that we haven't spoken about a lot, and we should. And I don't think, maybe it's not just us, but nobody in the MSU circles is talking enough about him, unless it's in kind of like a ha-ha fashion. Matt Coughlin could be the MVP of this team, should be the MVP of this team. Okay? Having an experienced kicker, he has a track record of good. If he can continue that in games like this against crummy opponent, you know, offenses, every time you get an opportunity for three, they're going to feel like a lot more in these types of games. So having a guy like him is good. I think he can win this game. I think he's the reason to believe in a lot of the 50-50 ones we talked about in the season preview. That's the margin of error right there. So I think he wins this game for Michigan State, not on necessarily a last second field goal or, you know, late minute drive. I just mean having him as a weapon consistently, because this offense, I don't trust them until further notice. You know, they're on watch. And so for me, it's a very low scoring game. I have no faith in Hunter Johnson whatsoever. I have no faith in this running back stable that they have, with their starter being hurt out for the season and everyone else transferring. It's going to be a low scoring game. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be like a thing only we could love. And I think the final score is going to be, I'll say, 19-16.
Oh boy, that is truly something only we could love. I love that score. This game is going to make me irrational, one way or the other. That's the only way that I can put it.
Correct.
Because I do not think that it's out of the realm of possibility that MSU comes out and beats the brakes off this Northwestern team. This is not a good team. This is not a good Northwestern team. I'm saying it's not out of the realm of possibility. Sure. I do not personally expect it. I'm not saying that. I wouldn't be overly shocked if MSU came out and won this game by 10. I just don't think this Northwestern team's any good. And I have faith. I think it's just that I have faith in Mel Tucker, and I have faith in this defensive staff, and I have faith in Chris Kapilovich. Like, I don't yet have that faith in Jay Johnson, which is the only thing that's making me hesitate. But I have faith in this coaching staff that they've been able to get good players in here. They finally have had time to coach them up. I think this is hopefully a situation in which, you know, you see some. I think we're going to be able to see a significant talent jump from last year to this year. All I'm really looking for out of this game is for Emma. First of all, I expect Michigan State to win. They're the better team in this game. They're the better team. They're more talented team. They should win this game. I don't care that it's on the road. This is the bad. The more I read about Northwestern, the more I can't believe that they're like, this is not a good team. but I say all that and then say, it's still an inexperienced MSU team, and I could see them dropping the ball. If they are able to win this game and grind it out, my faith in Mel Tucker will never have been higher. If they lose, I get a little bit, I get a little shaky. I get very like making excuses for myself and for the team. And then we spiral in all likelihood. But it's a Jimmy's and Joe's situation, I think, in this game, because I don't think either of them are going to be able to execute X's and O's the way that they will in 2-3 weeks or in a year or whatever. So yeah. I think our Jimmys and Joes are just, whether they've been there long enough or not, these guys have the same problem. So if you're just putting a hat on a hat, I think Michigan State's just got the better hats. So
agree.
That's how I'm, and then my score will be 23-16. No, that's too many points. 23-11. No, that's too many. That's too much.
This is great.
Hold on.
I feel terrible for our followers, but this is
great. Yeah, like 22-15. That's too, it feels like too many points, but I feel like that's a late 2-point conversion for Northwestern to make it 15.
I kind of love it. This is fantastic. I don't know why they're going for 2 and they're down 9, but whatever.
Because they're just following the book, John. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. I love this. Well, this was fun.
That's all I got, man. That's all I got.
All we need from you, the listener, is to give us why Youngstown State stinks. And yeah. Looking forward to some wild swinging overreactions to it. Northwestern football.
They're coming. You better be ready.
I love it.
All right, guys. Well, thanks as always for sticking with us. Happy football season. John, happy anniversary. And we will catch you guys next time.
See ya.